This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
What an honor it is to be here this evening. My name is Denise James, and I will be trying to help keep things moving through the afternoon so that we can touch all the bases we need to touch. And hear what we need to hear and begin the story of Safe Kids Stories. We're beginning this story right now. The music that just ended was part of the Houston School Anti-Bullying CD project. It includes poetry and songs by RuralLaneRecords.com. Should you want to go online, get that and support the Anti-Bullying Project, that's something you can do. I've been asked by Lorene to help guide us through the day, I think because she sometimes feels overly generous to me, but it's an honor to be here. I work right now as the Strategic Communications Director for the Philadelphia Police Department. Talk about a gritty, challenging job these days, you know. It calls on the communication skills that I've had the fortune to be able to develop over the years as a journalist for 30 years, some of that time spent at one of the local TV stations being a reporter. And if anyone knows the importance and the potential impact of the stories we tell about ourselves and others, I can vouch for that. Whether it's going into, being invited into someone's space as they experience jubilation and recording that story in whatever way we record it, whether it's print or audio or video, and holding it up so that they can see it, what an empowering thing to do. And sometimes when we walk into people's lives or we invite them to step into ours and the story is one about challenge, maybe even loss, difficulty, anger, telling that story is as important as the other, because in that story, sometimes if it's the story about something I'm dealing with and you do this story about me and you hold that story up as a mirror to me, I sometimes am reminded of power that's beneath the pain that I may have forgotten or maybe even see for the very first time. So the stories we tell about ourselves and each other pave the way to our future. They make clear what our past is and sometimes clarify where we're standing, although sometimes in the moment it's harder to see, but stories that we tell shape our future. And so that is why Safe Kids Stories is such an important thing. I want to give a special thanks to Penn's English Department for providing refreshments. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to partake, and to Aaron Levy, who is the director of the Slot Foundation, for opening this very safe space for us. I want to say that Safe Kids Stories aims its focus on safety and solutions rather than violence and failure. In the process, this website and social media initiative will elevate children and youth along with their caretakers and their friends, who will find brilliant ways to create safe space under seemingly impossible circumstances. And, you know, those kinds of things are all around us, seemingly impossible circumstances, and people find ways to create safe spaces anyway, and that's what this is all going to focus on. Dr. John Jackson Jr. is the Dean of the University of Pennsylvania School of Social Policy and Practice. He is a Richard Perry University professor and a Penn Integrates Knowledge professor. Dean Jackson's scholarly work examines racial and class-based differences in cities. He looks at how we theorize and deploy. And as I hear that, how we filter and act, something that's critically important. It's the kind of thing where I would imagine Dean Jackson understands very clearly the need to tell different stories about urban children, because the way we filter determines how we act. So we need to tell these stories and build filters that lean towards, push towards, direct towards safety. Okay, anyway, Dean Jackson.
Good afternoon. I'll be mercifully brief, I think. I just want to say three things really briefly. They're all interconnected, and I'm not even sure they're all going to be completely coherent. They're coherent in my head. I'm hoping when I articulate them, some of that coherence will stay. The first thing I can say quite unequivocally is, as the dean of one of Penn's 12 schools, what we call Penn's School for Social Justice, I am so excited by this initiative and pledge that we will make sure we are major partners with Lorene and with Safe Kids Stories. Absolutely. We're already trying to imagine what it means at the University of Pennsylvania to have four new deans. We only have 12 altogether. Four new deans start this year. And one of the things we're trying to do, especially the deans of nursing, education, and myself, the dean of social policy and practice, is think about a really rich, robust, and substantial cross-school initiative that allow us to combine the resources, the faculty, the staff, the student talent of all three of those places to do something important. And the theme that we've picked is really thinking about healthy families and healthy kids. And so I feel like I haven't even told you this, Lorene. So I feel like Safe Kids Stories will be central to that initiative. So I want to make sure we can use that as a springboard to bring nursing and education more roundly into the fold. So that's one thing. The second thing is, I feel like sometimes we get caught up in the ease of language. And so there's something about, I think, Safe Kids Stories, the idea, that framing of things, that almost seems too obvious and straightforward. And I want to just draw our attention to the fact that the reason why we even have to have an initiative like this is because in Philadelphia in 2015, it isn't easy to be a kid, period. It is profoundly unsafe, I would argue. Part of what I think we're trying to figure out is, what does safety even mean for young people? We're talking about physical safety, clearly, protecting them from abuse, violence, all kinds of violence, familial, communal, state-based violence. What a context. We're talking about psychological safety, emotional trauma. We don't have to be psychoanalysts or Freud to imagine what happens when you're a kid haunts you for the rest of your life, period. That's trauma if we're not careful. The stakes are incredibly high. So how do we deal with that? How do we make that work? How do we really produce safe spaces? It's easy to say the word. It's hard to manifest the reality. And so part of what we're trying to figure out is, what does that look like? How do we produce it? There's also, I think, social and cultural safety. There are all these narratives that circulate about what young people are, about what they can do. I remember I took a group of undergraduates from Penn into a Philadelphia public high school a year and a half ago. And our undergraduates were completely blown away, traumatized, I would argue, by the extent to which those young people already recognized, in this very accurate, I think, way, that at a certain level, society had already written them off, didn't care about them. There's a way in which, when we think about what the stakes are for producing safe spaces for young people, we have to recognize we're thinking on multiple scales at one and the same time. This is about our interpersonal relationships. It's about the sort of larger communal relationships and thinking about policies and practices writ large that can change the story about what's possible, that allow young people to hear something other than, we don't think you can make it. We don't think you belong. We already have our expectations for you, and they're tremendously low. So that's something I also want to bring up. And the last thing I want to say is, and I will put the mic down and sit down, it's one thing to say we're going to give people spaces to tell their stories. Is anyone going to listen? Is anyone going to listen? What I want to imagine is, we're going to try to produce a kind of dynamic that says, really, fundamentally, these stories not just should be told, but we'll have an audience willing to genuinely and generously listen to them. Listen for the solutions they offer up for the futures we want to imagine. And so part of what I want to think we're going to do here as educators, as researchers, as community activists, is try to find a way not just to clear space for storytelling, which is so profoundly important. I'm a filmmaker, always love storytelling in every medium. But it's not going to work unless the stories being told are being heard. Who's going to listen? And does the listener have the generosity of spirit and hope to recognize there's no safety unless we're all invested in trying to help co-produce it? So I'm glad you're here. I'm so excited to be a part of this endeavor, and I look forward to seeing how this unfurls. So good afternoon.
Thank you. You know, what stands out to me is when you said change the story about what's possible. And of course, are people going to listen? And I have to say that with Lorene as part of the team at the helm, if there's no one who knows how to tell a story in a way where you're afraid if you don't listen, you're going to miss something that you need or something that will make you feel warm or inspired or excited. So I think the ingredients are there to be able to tell the kinds of stories that people will listen to. It's hard to get people to promise to listen before you get them to just, even if it's accidentally or accidentally on purpose, hear the first few words of that story, feel the first few words of that story. So change the story about what's possible. It's what we work to make happen in schools. When children are learning about, when you guys are learning about whether it's math or dance or instruments or history, to change the story of what's possible for you to be able to do that. Dr. William Hite, as superintendent of Philadelphia schools, leads that charge among many other when it comes to educating, how many, 280,000? How many 80,000 children?
150.
I forgot about schools closing, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go there, I know that's a sore spot.
It's 203,000.
Okay, 203,000. even before Dr. Hite came to Philadelphia, he went to the School Reform Commission when they had a principal's summit, and he signaled his intent to move away from no tolerance or zero tolerance culture when it came to punishment of children, because so many recognize that as a pipeline to prison kind of culture, and move instead towards a commitment that involves restorative justice. His statement to the principals was this: we cannot suspend our way to safety. Seems simple, but I remember, and I remember as a journalist, being told to do a story about two 10-year-olds in an elementary school who were pushing each other in the lunch line. One fell, hit their head, and they wanted me to do a story about these children being kicked out and sent to a school that was for children with behavior problems. And I had been able to find out that neither of them had any problems before. And I can say this now because I don't work there anymore. I told them I couldn't get anybody to talk to me because that zero tolerance was insane. Two 10-year-olds then be labeled. So restorative, opportunity to teach, a moment for teaching. I'm glad you're at the helm, and now you're at the helm here.
Oh, thank you. And Dr. Jackson, thank you. And thank you for the conversation, and thank you for talking about what the conversation needs to be. So I appreciate your work, and congratulations, although it's a year late. I mean, but congratulations. Also, the Lorene Carey, and someone said earlier, how do you know Lorene? And I said, well, she gets the blame or the credit for me being here. She hired me, and she was on the SRC for those of us who may have forgotten that already, but it's one of the reasons why Philadelphia was became so interesting to me, because you had individuals like that in governance talking about what is possible and what is capable and what our children and communities are capable of achieving. So thank you, Lorene, for your continued work on behalf of the children of the city. Slott Foundation, thank you. This is a wonderful space. Is there any way for us to have access to this? Yeah, this is a great, and I like all of the neat little media types of things you have going on here. So great space, and thank you for supporting this work. And there, I had the opportunity to meet three fine students from Comegys as I was coming in, and thank you for being here on a Saturday. I hope you enjoyed your snow day today. Yeah? Okay, great. We had a snow day today. I love them when they fall on the weekend, too, by the way. And not just the students from Common Jesus, but their principal who's here with them. Thank you for being here. Individuals who support them in an extended day program, after school program, thank you. And the three teachers, three of my colleagues that I met from other schools as well. It was Houston, and you heard about the music that was playing before, and that was a project that one of the individuals from Houston shared with me almost a year ago, I recall, at the School of the Future on a Saturday. We have Kensington Business is here as well as Adair. And so thank you, and to the students who are here with you guys, thank you for being here as well. And then I have two other individuals who have been very important to this work. And you heard about this work in the work that we're trying to change in the school district. And the statement was right. And this was before I knew actually what I was even getting into. Someone asked me about zero tolerance, and I said, well, the problem with it is it doesn't work. We've seen the results of that and what it has done for children and how it has contributed to this this school to prison type of mentality with many of our young people. And you, as I indicated to principals that day, you can't suspend your way, nor can you discipline your way, nor can you arrest your way to save schools. We have to think about it very differently in the work that we do. And so I think that if we think about it from the perspective of creating positive environments and what that means for many of our young people, and just like everything else, zero tolerance was implemented in a lot of places across the country. Why? Because it was easy. And it didn't take a lot of additional resources to do it. Actually talking about children's social and emotional needs and trying to respond to that actually takes a little more. It takes a little more investment. It takes a little more knowledge. It takes a little more development. And it takes more resources. And it takes the right people. And I'm thrilled that we have two very dedicated people working with us in the school district. I convinced one to come from Maryland, who came with me from Maryland to Philadelphia, and she is running a division called Student Services. And we felt that that was one of the first positions that I created. Why? Because we have to think about all of the things that affect our children that are non-academic. And Karen Lynch, who is the Chief of Student Services, who's here today, has been doing some pretty substantial work in that space. And another individual that I'm going to take credit for, although I shouldn't take any credit for, because she was here long before I arrived, and she's done tremendous work. Previously a Stoneleigh Fellow, or started in the district as a Stoneleigh Fellow, is still working as a Stoneleigh Fellow in the district as well, has done some tremendous work around creating positive behavior, intervention systems, restorative practices, and just trying to help us develop and create a climate that is respectful and caring and encouraging and supporting for many of our students, and that's Jody Greenblatt. Jody, glad to have you here as well. So I can close. I want to be brief like Dr. Jackson, and I don't want to talk to you all day. In addition, I have to be somewhere else in a few minutes. The other thing that's really important is we think about this, creating safe and caring schools where children can succeed. It means that we have to build systems of organization over chaos, and it cannot be just like a free-for-all, but it has to be intentional and purposeful around the things that we're trying to accomplish. It is developing strong principal leadership to help nurture and protect great teachers like the teachers that I talked about today, and ensuring that those individuals are developed in order to do that work, but they also recognize those individuals as colleagues, key colleagues in this work. It's not a person that is a subordinate, but instead it's an individual who is working beside and with those leaders in order to create the types of environments that we want in our schools. It is convincing voters and legislators that children deserve great schools. And yes, that means here in Philadelphia. And that's not just a slogan. It means that we require the investments necessary to return many of those things that we were talking about at the beginning of this program. And so it is making sure that we as Philadelphia no longer hold the distinction of spending less money per child than most of our surrounding districts, although we educate more children who have significant needs. And so really that's some very important work that we could do and should do collectively, and I think this work will only help in that regard. It is building a consistent culture of caring. And I have the ability and the distinction of meeting with students monthly. And those students are, they share in a very raw and straightforward way things that impact them and things that are helpful to them and things that, quite frankly, are not helpful. And I remember when we, early on in the process, when I first started meeting with what we call now the Superintendent Student Advisory Group, and you all are welcome, too, to come and attend because all students are welcome. And I remember the students, and I always challenge them to be selfish. And I want them to be selfish to talk about those things that matter to them and those things that will help them succeed. And it's interesting. And many individuals think that that would be many of the things that many of the adults talk about. Like a lot of things that I talk about in Harrisburg are around resources or policies. When the children talk, instead, they're just talking about individuals who care for them, or individuals who respect them, or individuals who are going to sufficiently challenge them. And through the words of one 11th grader, she said, "I want to be treated like an 11th grader, not an 11th grader in the third grade." And so as we think about building a consistent culture of caring, these things become extremely important. I think we should all have the belief in the incredible resilience of our young people, especially here in Philadelphia, even those who've experienced trauma. And I think we should understand that we can and should teach children to be caring and responsible members of the community, just like we teach them to read, write, and do mathematics. And I think all of those things are critically important. So in closing, I want to thank Lorene Carey once again for her leadership in this work. Since her contributions while serving on the SRC, she has demonstrated care and concern and promoted the importance of positive school climate. Today is another great initiative that I've already tweeted about, conceived and executed by Lorene, and one more reason I so appreciate the chance to once again serve as a member of her team. Many thanks to all who are here and for positively responding to her request to highlight what are proven strategies that lead to the types of environments that we need for all of the children in this city, those that are safe and caring. So I'm delighted to be here with you today, and I look forward to conversing with many of you as we move forward this evening. So thank you once again.
Thank you, Dr. Hyde, thank you. It will be great to now hear from some of the young people. And I have to say, Jody, I was going to refer to you and have you stand up where people could see you. You got away with a little wave from back there, but Dr. Hyde already referenced the work you're doing. So congratulations on that work. We can hear from some young folk now. Greg, are you in the house? Greg Corbin is part of the fuel, and the young people are part of the fuel behind the championship, nationally championship winning Philly Youth Poetry Movement. And if you've never had a chance to hear people, these young people, tell their own story through the power of the way they weave words together, then you're in for a treat. And do I understand correctly, Greg, that some folks are here with you today to share something with us? You got somebody with you, okay. So Greg Corbin, also known as Just Greg, I invite both of you up. I don't know the young man's name, to the front. What's your name, sir?
You want to keep talking?
Oh, no, I just want to know his name.
Yeah, his name is Dave.
Dave, okay, everybody, this is Dave.
Okay, so real quick, I want to do two pieces. And yeah, Do I need the mic?
Yes.
Okay, because y'all recorded. All right, so I want him to do two pieces so he can show y'all, you know, what happens when young people are given the safe space. But what we do at PYPM, we do free writing workshops and performance workshops every Saturday, mainly Saturdays, 12 to 3 o'clock. And then we're doing them now on Wednesdays, 3:30 to 6:30 after school. And also the same thing on Monday, 3:30 to 6:30. I have to get used to saying that because we're starting that in February, and that's a new thing for us. But the importance of having a safe space, a place where young people's voice is included and at the table, is one of those things we keep pushing for. Unfortunately, we live in a time where adults dominate the conversation around curriculum and lessons, when young people also have a voice and they actually have ideas about how they want to be taught. They're going to inherit a world that adults get to design, but we should actually get more inclusive with closing these generation gaps where their voice is at the table, whether it's around curriculum, policy, City Hall, or wherever it needs to be. So Dave is going to do two pieces for y'all, and he's a freshman at Temple University. I know him for about the last 2 years, and that's pretty much it. If you want to go to our website, it's pypm215.org. And that's it. And I just want to say thank you, Lorraine Carey. You're awesome. She's like a mentor to me, so I get to call her whenever I have a question or whatever. But just seeing the stuff that she's doing is very incredible. And as he's doing this poem, I want you to keep in mind, what is it to be safe mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically?
Okay. Like Greg said, my name is David Pratt. I've been with PYPM for the last 3 years. Cool. I have a piece for you guys, and yeah. Dear Santa, I regret to inform you that this may be the last time it's socially acceptable for me to send you a letter, and I don't want you to fade into distant memories, so this Christmas has to be different. We can leave no stones unturned. Santa, this Christmas, can I have a car? Doesn't have to be brand spanking new, just something I could use. Santa, can I get a Rolly? No tricks, no clicks, or I'll be clowned by the homies. Santa, can I get an apartment with rent paid for a couple years? Or my tuition paid for a couple years? Because these college fees are ridiculous. Santa, can I get some fresh Nikes or Jordans, a new phone, or a whole new wardrobe? Santa, can I get a clean hood to come home to? Can you allow me to walk outside without fear? Santa, can you stop the shots that soar through my block? Santa, can my people get justice this year? My community is starting to feel like a land of misfit toys, disregarded masterpieces left to rummage through refuse to find what we need to survive, still targeted for our difference. Santa, have you seen these travesties? Because it seems that your Christmas cheer doesn't always reach the lower income area. Santa, tell me, how many have disappeared from your nice list to wind up in caskets? How many crimes of those on your naughty list have been omitted? How many Christmas lists have you ignored? Prayers for the returns of innocent baby boys and girls. Santa, it seems the pigs in blue are still trying to slaughter us. Santa, can you make my melanin no longer seem dangerous? Santa, can you douse the fire that ignites in their bellies when they see me? Santa, can you make their colors more permanent? They beat blacks and blues into whomever they choose. Santa, who's left to protect me? Can someone protect me? Santa, I am an endangered species. We are an endangered species. Mark us as an endangered species. Maybe then they'll care. Santa, I'm sorry for the extensive list. I just know that my life only measures as a fraction of my white counterparts, and I know the rule, one gift per child. So Santa, could we get freedom or justice or something close? I just want to go to sleep and know that I won't have to avenge another martyr in the morning. I just want to feel safe in my own country. I just want to feel like this degree will be worth something. I just want to feel like I am worth something. Santa, I won't be sleeping Christmas Eve, just waiting on your action, and no failure to deliver may result in another loss from your nice list. P.S. No cookies and milk. Those are treats that are earned. That was my first piece, and and I have one more piece, and then I'll be done and stuff. So just spit that piece, and we're good. Did you know the alphabet didn't always look as it does now? Before, love the young letters will go out to find strapping young numbers to be with, and once they found their match, they settle down, marry, live out the rest of their lives together happily. Didn't matter who was with who, there was just one rule. No letters with letters, and no numbers with numbers, no exceptions. It's just how things were. until A and Z came along. Friends for years, knew almost everything about each other, no number could understand them like they understood each other, so they just decided to be together. It was less of a hassle. Plus, it came with some huge benefits. EZ was more on the curvier side, and A was a great listener, making their time spent together magical. They'd spend entire days basking in each other's presence. A would wrap her arms around Z and explain to her the 24 reasons she loved her. One, you're beautiful. Two, you're creative. Three, you're delightful. Four, you're everything that I could have hoped for. A would continue until the sunset, where they both had to return home and pretend that their days never happened. The others wouldn't be okay with hearing about it. A and Z had to be careful. The others would start to realize how different they were, how much time they spent together, how they never spoke of numbers, only of each other, how their smiles were never as large as they were when they were together, how their smiles, their joy, their relationship was pure, genuine, unmistakable love, so much so they kept their faces hidden on their way home, concealing the only thing that proved the other speculations true. After months of keeping their relationship hidden, they realized the happiness wasn't fond of the dark. They decided they'd tell everyone. The monsters aren't the only things that come out of closets. Gold isn't the only thing at the end of the rainbow, but there's letters and numbers who love just as hard but can't understand why they aren't allowed to love as freely. A and Z gathered every number from near and far. And they'd imagined that everyone would just be happy that they were happy. They thought wrong. The others were disgusted. You could see in their face before they even spoke. You could hear in their voice disguised as concern for their souls. Love between letters is unnatural, unholy, barbaric, chaotic, and no one wants chaos, so they captured the two. Debated on what they'd do with them, death was brought up often. So was exile. Both thought of as too humane of treatment, so they decided to separate the two for the rest of eternity. Using their bodies as blockades so dense they never break through. A would never see Z again. But they were just close enough that they pressed their ears to the blockade, they could faintly hear each other. A didn't want Z to forget how much she loved her, so she whispered into the blockade. One, beautiful. Two, creative. Three, delightful. Four, everything that I could have hoped for, and continued until the sunset. And waited to start all over again. Thank you.
So give Pratt another round of applause. Unfortunately, we're in a time when, you know, race is at the tipping point of every conversation. And it needs to be more of a comfortable conversation. I'm just glad we're in a room where people aren't judged, and people don't, you know, flinch when certain words come out. Because I looked at people's reactions, and I feel good that we're in a space now. We're actually talking about a safe space, but we created a safe space. And one of the ways you create a safe space is to, one, understand that people come from different backgrounds. They come from different cultures, different experiences. Two, don't judge people. Just listen and be open. Keep your biases to yourself. Give everybody your time and their patience. Three, be there to create. Think about, what are you going to do next? What's the solution? What happens after that? A lot of young people find ways to silence themselves because they think it's cool. I go into a lot of classrooms, and the boys are constantly, they don't want to raise their hand because, unfortunately, being quote unquote, the stereotype of a nerd is not safe. Being smart is not safe. We have to find a way to shift our value system and make these things cool again. Teach our children how to dream a different world, because the old is passing away slowly and swiftly at the same times. So if you're interested, if you got a student or a niece or a nephew or a child, anybody in your life, free writing workshops, every Saturday, every Monday, and every Wednesday. Mondays and Wednesdays, 3:30 to 6:30. On Saturdays, 12 to 3 o'clock. Also, we do our youth nights where we actually have poetry slams. The last one was actually, the last one we had was on last Saturday. at the Rotunda, which is across the street, we had 175 young people in that room. 175. Anything is possible. You just have to give them the space. You just have to be willing to create the space and watch them grow it. They can do anything they put their minds to, as long as you're willing to tell them and show them you believe in them. They respond to actions, not just words. So thank you for listening to Pratt. When you get the chance, go on our website, pypm215.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks to Dave and to Greg for the work that he has done and continues to do. And that's when work is clearly not just a job. You know, it's clearly a calling. We have some other talented young people with things to say in the house that I'd like to recognize. They put together an anti-bullying video. I hear them kind of sighing and smiling up here. They're from Comegys after-school program in West Philadelphia. You heard Dr. Height speak about them a little earlier. The principal, Wilmer, is here as well. After-school director, Daniels, would that be you? Yes, Daniel. Okay, Daniel. And writer-performers, Diamond Houston. Did I say that right? Stand up, please. Turn around so they can see you. Keon Marshall. And what's your name, sweetheart? Daniel didn't create it, but he's here, so we want to give... Yaya. He didn't create it, but he's here, so we want to give him some love. Would you just stand up and turn around? And... Absolutely. So they've produced a anti-bullying video, and people say those words, produced a video and whatnot, and it's no simple task until you've been doing it for years, and even then there are challenges. You have to conceptualize. You have to think visually. How do I give words life? How do I illustrate what's in here, what's in here, what's out here in the air? And for these young people to take that task on and make it be something that can resonate not just in their own mirror, but in the mirrors of anybody else who watches it, I take my hat off. I say amen to that. And let's take a look at the video that they've put together.
Hey, that's my ball.
No, it's not.
Hey, that's my ball.
It is not your ball.
Hey, it's my ball.
Hey, hey, hey. Be a buddy, not a bully.
Oh, she brought a new song. That song's catchy. Be a buddy, not a bully. Be a buddy, not a bully. Be a buddy. Not a bully, not a bully, not a bully, not a bully.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how to keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how to keep from going under. I said I'm tired of being bullied every single day. Every corner that I turn, it's a bully to pay. I need a break, quit, break and pause, need to be fixed. Take a step outside my house and I'm caught in the mix. What will it end? The bully and the teasing. Picking on the kid, you don't even got a reason. They say they better than us, oh, the lies But why don't they try somebody their own size? Laughing at us, thinking it's funny. Picking on kids in school for lunch money. That ain't the way it's supposed to be. How can one little fist separate you and me? Can't nobody take my pride. Can't nobody hold me down. Oh no, I gotta keep it moving. Yo, new school or old school? We gotta change, rearrange, use our brains to study the change. They can't hold me down, cause I'm book smart for haters who got no love, like a broke heart, never easily broken. Y'all pop charts, only thing I bully is rappers on hip-hop charts. Lyrically, I'm a miracle to the game, cause when hip-hop died, his last words my name. Check it, I be resurrecting it every second I kick it. I be busting the records and getting rid of the wicked. Gotta make good change, like a dollar bill. Sometimes I wonder why they try to keep me under.
Be a buddy, not a bully. Be a buddy, not a bully. Be a buddy, not a bully. Not a bully. Be a buddy, 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 not a bully.
bully.
All right. Verses by Keon Marshall, hook by Diamond Houston. Would you guys stand up one more time for us? Would you be open to telling us just a little bit about how some of that came together? Would you be open to joining me for about 2 minutes? I promise I won't make it long. Okay? I'm going to use this mic for them. Okay. Whew. First of all, if we can just share with them again how we felt about seeing that production. So who wrote the lyrics?
Me.
And so do you just like go to sleep and you wake up and lyrics start pouring out of you? How does that work? How did that work?
No, like when I'm bored, I just write raps for fun. But when I went to after school program, Mr. Reggie, my after school mentor, he asked me to do, because he knew I knew how to rap, he asked me to do a rap about bullying. So I said, I'm going to do it for him.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Now, where'd you learn about all that old school music?
I don't know. I just be on YouTube listening to stuff, and Grandmaster Flash popped up.
And you know, sometimes we have the nerve to think that young people don't pay attention to enough of what we want to them to pay attention to. They pay attention to what they need to pay attention to, and some of it's from before they got here, and some of it's from where they're headed. Now, you did the hook, right? Did you make those words up?
Yeah.
So I want to ask you the same thing. How do you come up with the perfect words? You've got a mission. It's not like you just say, I'm going to say these words and they'll be perfect. They have to fit the mission. How did you do that?
It started out that me, my after-school teacher, and my two friends, we were in a classroom, and we just started making beats on the desk. And so I just came out saying the lyrics, and we thought about putting a YouTube video up, and we got Keon and the rest of the students to come into the video with us.
Have you guys done this, something like this before? So as you sat there, watching yourselves, listening to yourselves, taking in the energy in the room, what was going through your mind and your heart?
Wow.
And you?
I don't know. Sometimes I just be funny, but then I just like it. I'm like, I never knew this would happen.
All right. Well, keep doing it. Keep telling us what we need to hear from you. And thank you for sharing your artistry. It's not always easy to pour yourself out like that, because you just put yourself in the crosshairs of criticism or support. Well, you got all support here. Okay? Thank you. Well, today launches Safe Kids Stories. It's a beginning to create a virtual community to surround children with intentional adult concern for their safety. We keep hearing safety, hearing all aspects of what safety can mean. Please don't let it go in here and fall somewhere where it's of no use. Let it resonate. Let what comes up for you resonate as you guys break off and get asked some questions in a little while. We know, too, that the measures we take to keep children safe are almost the same measures we take to build great learning environments. It's a win-win. It's definitely a win-win. And the social media to crowdsource more input is going to begin closer to the opening in September. In about 10 minutes, we're going to ask you to talk with each other, about what you want the site to do, whom we should invite to participate, and how you want to contribute. Three real simple things and anything else you want to add to that conversation. But first, a woman that's been referenced several times this afternoon is going to preview briefly some of the sample posts and show you how one generous and eloquent classroom teacher used his blog to explore his history with the safety of books and to share his experience with students. That woman would be Lorene Carey.
Thank you, Denise. Thank you to every. You took the script with you.
I'm sorry.
I know. Wait. Whoa. No. Okay. Thank you. That's good. Thank you, everyone, to young people, grown-ups, to the to our leadership, to Jody. We are crowdsourcing. We love that word. We are crowdsourcing. We need everyone into the conversation. And we need to figure out together how to use this to tell the kinds of stories that often are not told, and to develop the audiences, and to figure out strategies to make people listen. And that's part of the way that we can support young people. I'm away from the mouse now, so I'm going to ask Aaron if he would also please pull up the About page. The About page has on it a beautiful and wonderful image. I'd like to thank the artist who's with us today, Eric Battle. Will you stand up, please? Thank you, Eric. Eric's going to work with us some more to help us illustrate and give pictures to the Save Stories. Greg Corbin has not left. Pratt has not left. Thank you so much. Thank you for the PYPM contribution. What those young people do for expression is extraordinary, and we're going to work on coordinating so that we can post on this site videos of the young people doing their spoken word. Today was just a taste of that. I want to thank Denise James also for serving as our host today. Denise has been an invaluable member of our community since her days as reporter in Anchor at 6 ABC News. Such a leader's joining the police department integrates years of observation and civic engagement into that department. That makes me feel a lot safer right now. I also want to thank Dean Jackson. I want to thank Superintendent Height. Professor Peter Kahn, who's with us. Editor Becky Sinkler, who is not here. She's a former editor of the New York Times Book Review, who has been editing these posts. She's in New Hampshire now and continues to work with us. I want to thank Jasmine Salters and especially Jody Greenblatt for her work all throughout the district. I'd like to go through the site with you a little bit, and then we're going to land on the page with John Lavin's work today. Let's please go to our theme. Each week, Safe Kids Stories, starting in September when we'll launch, each week we're going to have a theme. Some themes will take a whole month, but the idea is that our theme, because so many things are necessary to keep young people safe. Safety, and I learned a lot of the safety. We have two other people in the room. I'd like to acknowledge Jerry Vassar and Diane Wagenhals, who are the people who've created an amazing, would you stand for a moment? All right, we're here. They have created the curriculum that many of our teachers are learning from. I always call those names, it sounds to me like Dr. Seuss, the names of these courses. There's Anger 1 and Anger 2. Advanced Anger. These are all the things we need to know as teachers. Effective discipline. Extraordinary ways, not just to say the goal, but to give people strategies to do better, step by step by step. Extraordinary work. Every week they'll be, and they've talked to us about the complexity of safety. Safety is emotional safety, psychological, all the things that Dr. Jackson talked about. So we're going to each week choose a theme. All right? This theme, this week, this sample week, the theme is choosing a text. choosing a book. Teachers say everywhere, we've got teachers who say, if kids are bored, if children are bored, it's a prerequisite to acting out. God knows adults act out when they're bored. Heaven knows that's true. So we'll have a theme. We have Signe Wilkinson. You'll recognize her work. She is a Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist from the Daily News. She said, I'd love to donate some cartoons to you. So this image comes from a line in John Lavin's piece that sometimes a book chooses you. And this is how it looked to her. Right? A book chooses you. Would you please go to sample posts? So with that theme, there would be sample posts. Here are some of them. Notes of Hope, Choosing a Book. This is a post by a teacher. This is what he says. My father discouraged books. Choosing books was a luxury. Reading took time. Here, you read it.
Sure. Yeah. He taught me that the point of a man's existence was to make as much money as possible. He schooled me in choices that put money first. To teach me, he beat me. What I learned on the surface was, no surprise, to fight. But what I learned on a deeper level was desperation.
For English teacher John Lavin, a book and then a teacher chose him. There's a beautiful part in this post. And I'm hoping everybody will go to safekidsstories.com and read these posts. There's a beautiful part where a teacher has him read from a book called Platero Yo. I was up very late trying to read the Spanish, and it was beautiful. But that teacher had him read and said to him, you're a poet, and it changed his life. Books About Bad Children is a very funny piece written by our editor, Rebecca Sinkler, who, after she'd edited all these pieces, got excited and started remembering that the books she liked were all bad kids. She liked the bad books. She loved them. She even tells us there's one, and it really is a god-awful book. It's got pictures like this. You see what they're doing to this boy with a sweet tooth? It was very German 19th century, this book. She says in the book, don't look it up, don't buy it on eBay, it's a terrible book. Why did these make it? But she says that these stories made her feel safe because the stories with all the good children left her isolated in her own misbehavior. Our next, you've seen already the video, Be a Buddy, Not a Bubba Bubba Bully. I can't say it without the extra B's, you know. We have another here by Tina Smith Brown, who has created a curriculum called Letter to My Father. Oh, my mom's here. Come on, sit in front. Come on. Tina Smith Brown has raised three sons. Two of them were her nephews that she raised after her sister died. And one was a stepson. She says in her piece that she learned years later something that parents often don't learn, which is that the narrative, the stories they needed to tell, included saying how much they missed their mother. It was hard for them to say them around her when she's doing everything possible to raise them. She talks about all the ways that we silence children's voices. And this curriculum is a way of getting children to write letters to their fathers, whether they know them or not, whether they're happy with them or not, as a way of making their own heads safer spaces for that relationship. For people who are not yet able to say it to their father, they can say it to themselves. How books can help. Well, this is a piece written by one of John Lavin's young people, and we're going to meet some more of them soon. This is a piece where this young woman talks about the fact that books have a strange way of helping you in your life. And she goes on to talk about how they help. She's not here today because she got admitted to Westchester. Yes, and they have an orientation. So we're delighted. We have a curriculum. A book called Wonder is about a boy with, they call it facial difference. He has a disfigurement of his face. He's been homeschooled, and in fifth grade, his mother and father decide it's time for him to go to real school. Well, guess what? Fifth grade is hard when you have a regular face. So this is a, and she's created a curriculum about this novel, which is an excellent novel. Robin's not here because she had to take her son, who's an athlete, someplace to play something. She wishes she were here. And finally, Words That Made a World of Difference. Sometimes we think that the only way we can get through to young people is with crazy extras. This is total old school. This is dictionaries. Dictionaries, regular book dictionaries, not online dictionaries. Chris Long has 10 or 15 new words a week. They look them up, they do all kinds of stuff, they read them, they write them, they do all kinds of, they steadily improve their literacy. Steadily all the way through. And I know that she will take people 1 and 2 and 3 years in a year. But she needs dictionaries. You got to have the dictionaries. You can't just pretend, right, with a dictionary. So she had a Donors Choose campaign, and this talks about that campaign. And one of the funny things is that the young people, what else did they learn besides crazy words like from Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol? They also learned that donors somewhere cared about them and their learning. And that mattered to them. Yeah? Amen. We'd like to bring up, please, John Lavin. And you have two young people, because one of the things he did was choosing a book is so important that he gives an assignment telling his young people, his seniors, to choose a book for the young people in their life. Please.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. And thank all of you for your leadership in supporting this initiative to deepen our literacy and our ability to read. I say uncertainty. A young man told me, I just didn't know. And that was the frightening thing. Being uncertain is the premise of our fear or our rage or our confusion when we act out. Uncertainty is also the premise of what we do when we inquire and we demonstrate curiosity. It seems that the big difference is that to inquire, to ask questions, demands that we do so in a frame of reference that is a safe space for us emotionally, psychologically, to feel supported and stable. The classroom is one of those spaces where we can still be kind to each other at no cost. So the issue for us, uncertainty, whether we're teaching the complex math that obviously leaves us scratching our head, you know, or the quizzical moments of great tragedy and comedy, how we understand what makes us laugh or what brings us to a kind of noble sobriety and sadness. The big question, we learn it. If we're fortunate, we learn it in a safe space that's stable. And then what do we do with it? So spending our time learning from each other, one of the great lessons is that students are crucial educators. I've brought two of them with me today from Kensington Business High School. And what they've done is they've shown how very restorative reading is. On the post, on the site, Ms. Tierra Bay reads a short essay about how reading became for her a resource to reflect about anger that she felt and confusion at different moments in her life. She did that because she had space to inquire, to be curious, and to grow. So I'd like to ask, Liz Halloran and Natalie Cotto to come up. And Thanks for the love. As educators, what we've asked together, students and teacher, is what happens when you choose a book? You meet so many undiscovered selves. How will a book change me? There are possibilities in that, no less. We did a lot of deliberation on this and realized that as 11th and 12th graders, there are lots of young people in our lives, children, nieces, nephews, sons and daughters. What does it mean to choose a book? And so I'm going to interview a little bit these two great editors and educators who are going to tell us what book they chose. And so I'll start with Liz because she's closest.
Is on?
Cool.
Is so, on?
Liz Halloran, will you show us the book that you read?
Well, I read Knock Knock by Daniel Beattie. It's called My Dad's Dream for Me.
Yes.
It's about a young boy whose father was incarcerated for most of his life, and he had to grow up without his father.
And why would you choose this book? Why would you choose this book for a younger child?
I would choose this book for a younger child because it really like explains how he had to deal with things, even though like his father wasn't there. He was hoping for days and nights, sleeping. He couldn't sleep. He was waiting for his dad to come home, and he just wasn't, and he didn't know why. So it's basically like, even though you don't have a parent role or whatever there, it basically tells you just do what you gotta do. You know, stay positive. Don't let someone you love's actions encourage you to do the same thing they did to make you end up in the wrong place.
Would the child in the book have felt uncertain, confused?
Yeah, he was confused about why his dad wasn't coming home.
What does he decide toward the end?
Well, he decides he has to, you know, continue doing what he has to do after his father sent him a letter back home and telling him that he won't be there. So he basically just had to, you know, deal with life and deal with it.
You chose the book. Did the book choose you?
Well, the book did choose me a little bit because I know a lot of people. Like, my parents aren't, you know, they're both there for me and support me for whatever. And I know a lot of people that's parents are in and out of their lives and, you know, people that gotta go from house to house. So it's like, it kind of makes me understand where they're coming from and more of how I can try to help them with their situations and things they need.
Let's give it up for Liz. Natalie, you read a different book.
Yes, I did.
Yes. Can you tell us what happens in the book?
Well, I read the book called The Flat Rabbit. The Flat Rabbit is about a dog who was walking down the street one day and spotted a rabbit flattened down on the floor. And along came a rat which had spotted the same disturbing sight of the rabbit. They stood there staring at her for a bit, and then the rat got an idea to move her, but then thought again, and the dog agreed to the idea. They thought about it over and over again, till the dog had an idea of his own. They decided to move the rabbit and take her back to the dog's house. They worked all night till the next day. When the next day came, they had made the rabbit into a kite. They decided to fly the kite so the rabbit could feel free in the sky.
Death. We think about death, how young people experience it. Would you choose this book for a young person and why?
Well, I would choose this book for a young person personally because in my life I've had some loss. I've had some tragedies in my family. But I know others who've gone through the same thing. So I think a child who has lost somebody will get an understanding of the book, but in a positive action.
Did the book choose you?
Well, I chose the book.
The last scene is... Describe it for us.
Well, the last scene basically shows how the dog and the rat give the rabbit some freedom, in which putting her in the sky on the kite. But putting her in the sky, basically, they put her, making her feel free without being stuck to the floor forever. And it shows the point of view up in the sky, how the rat and the dog look from below in the rabbit's point of view.
Thank you, Natalie Cotto. Yeah. Thank you. I'm thankful for all of your reflections and for the ultimate opportunity to advocate for the choosing of books over anger, fear, confusion, and the hope that we do resolve questions like relativity, you know, tragedy, and the epistemological dilemma that it leaves us with. Who's next?
So as you saw, I kind of lost the shared script for a moment, so I'm just making sure that I'm in the right place here. Sometimes redundancy is perfect, but other times not so much. Thank you. All right, very good. So from what I understand, there are some people from the Nonfiction Now editorial group that are going to help us move to the next phase of things we're going to do, to guide you to your stations where you can mill and write and record how you think things should develop from here. You've heard a lot about safety today. You've heard a lot about what's going to be happening in the future. You've heard from young people. You've heard from people who work with young people. And hopefully now it's time for you to hear from your inner voice and share that in the mix. Some of the questions that you're going to be asked as this site and social media movement develops is, what do you want to see on the site? Can we make this a movement? And how? What do you want to see on social media from Safe Kids Stories? Which platforms would be most effective and most interesting? What events do you want Safe Kids to spark, sponsor, and host? And would you like to talk more about Letter to My Father or do a project in your classroom? Okay. And I would be remiss if I did not do a quick shout out to my baby cousin, Kiana, who is a freshman at Drexel University, and to my granddaughter, Nzinga, who are both in the audience there. Nzinga, where are you, sweetie? Is she asleep? I'm sorry. She just had dance all day, and she's been up since 5, so I just had to do that shout out because they came to be a part of this. So the people who are going to be escorting you to your stations, where are you? All right, very good. Don't be scared. Here you go. And thank you for having me, Lorraine.
Thank you. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, Denise, so much for this. We want to have 30 minutes of your talking together. What else should be on this site? What do you know that's fabulous that we should be talking about? Would you like to do a letter to your father? There is a table outside. Tina Smith Brown has come. She has her curriculum. What is your organization? Maybe I see David Brown from West Philadelphia. WEPAC, West Philadelphia Alliance for Children, is here. Thank you. Who's already working with us. Our fiction students are going to write stories for children and then read them in their libraries in West Philadelphia schools. Those children, by the way, are then going to be our workshop and tell the fiction students whether they like the book or not. And then they have to rewrite it until the little kids like it. We'll see how that works. Please, we would love you to grab post-it notes that are on the tables. Grab paper. Send to this email address if you just want to sit by yourself on your phone and you're thinking, I know 5 things that ought to be on here. I know 6 teachers. I'd like to write this kind of a blog. I'd like to do this. I want to do this kind of a video. This is what should happen. You really have to go talk to thus and so at this school. So you don't have necessarily stations. The one station there is Letter to My Father. Please mill, please talk to each other, please enjoy each other, but please tell us what we need to do to make this a great site for launching in September. And thank you so much for coming and be part of this.